Warsh's Fed ambitions collide with skepticism from Senate Democrats. The Federal Reserve's new chair, Kevin Warsh, triggered a bond market sell-off last week that pushed long-term Treasury yields to their highest level since before the 2007-08 financial crisis, revealing that the institution's core problem is not messaging strategy, but rather the market's mounting doubt about whether the Fed operates independently of Donald Trump. Warsh has held the chair since May 2026. At the Federal Open Market Committee meeting that concluded last week, he and his colleagues voted 9-3 to hold the key policy rate steady, keeping the federal funds rate in a range of 3.5 to 3.75%, the same range that prevailed at his first policy meeting in June. The rate decision itself carried no surprise. What followed did. At his post-meeting press conference, Warsh declined to explain why the three dissenting members who pushed for an immediate rate hike had failed to persuade him, offered no directional signal on future policy, and suggested that rising long-term rates were effectively doing some of the Fed's inflation-fighting work on its behalf. Bond traders read the session as a policy vacuum and sold long-term treasuries. Yields on those instruments, which move inversely to prices, climbed to levels not seen since before the great financial crisis. James Bullard, the former president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Sint. Louis told Bloomberg the press conference was a little bit rocky and the bond market reaction nerve-wracking for a central banker. Loretta Mester, who led the Cleveland Fed from 2014 to 2024, told the Wall Street Journal, "I want to feel comfortable that the Fed knows what it is doing. I don't think it's sustainable what he's doing, in terms of not saying anything." When two former Fed officials, both of whom traditionally guard their public commentary carefully, speak this plainly within days of a press conference, the signal is unambiguous. The yield spike is not an abstraction. Treasury interest payments already consume a sum comparable to the Pentagon's annual budget. Every basis point that long-term yields hold above recent norms compounds that fiscal burden directly, raises the cost of mortgages for American households, and widens the spread at which the U.S. government finances its deficit. The Fed's communication failure has a measurable price tag, and that price is rising. Dario Perkins, economist at T.S. Lombard, compared Warsh's press conference to Trump's Liberation Day tariff announcement, and to the Liz Truss mini-budget that ended her prime ministership in 2022, describing all three as moments where you suddenly realize global policymakers are totally out of their depth and don't know what they are doing. The inflation arithmetic that Warsh refused to present the Fed's inflation mandate is 2%. Between February and June 2026, the headline inflation rate climbed from 2.4% to 4.2%. On its face, that 1.8 percentage point move over 4 months represents one of the sharpest inflation accelerations in recent years and would ordinarily compel a hawkish response. The underlying composition, though, is more nuanced. The primary driver was energy. Trump's decision to escalate military action against Iran in February caused oil prices to surge. By mid-May, as the U.S. and Iran reached a ceasefire, oil prices reversed and fell through early July. The June Consumer Price Index fell 0.4% month over month, offering the Fed genuine cover to hold. There is, as of the source reporting, no evidence of a broad-based wage price spiral. That case was available to Warsh. He declined to make it. 8 of his 11 Federal Open Market Committee colleagues voted with him, suggesting the analytical logic for holding was clear enough inside the committee room. The mystery, as John Cassidy noted in The New Yorker, is why Warsh chose not to articulate that rationale publicly. Our view, the information gap is itself the policy. Warsh has positioned his silence as a principled rejection of forward guidance, arguing that the Fed's 2021 commitment to easy policy locked it into a damaging path when inflation surged. That critique has merit historically. But declining to give forward guidance is distinct from declining to give any current state guidance at all. The former is a strategic framework. The latter is opacity, and markets price opacity as risk. The Iran variable and the energy price wildcard the ceasefire that brought oil prices down through early July 2026 has since collapsed. Tehran has used proxies to extend conflict across the region, with Houthi forces threatening shipping at the Bab el-Mandeb Strait as an alternative choke point to the Strait of Hormuz. Iranian diplomats told the Wall Street Journal that Tehran is prepared to exploit Trump's political vulnerability ahead of midterm elections and would consider preemptive strikes if negotiations fail. Analysts covering global energy markets have warned that crude and refined product inventories have drawn down sharply and that tank bottoms may be imminent unless Hormuz reopens. Efshan Ostevar of the Naval Postgraduate School told the Financial Times that Iran and its allies calculate that prolonging the conflict erodes the political resolve of their adversaries over time. Trump's approval ratings on both economic management and the Iran war have declined, including among Republican voters. The implication for Warsh is direct. The primary inflation variable is a geopolitical event over which he has zero control. If Iran escalates and oil prices spike again, the June Consumer Price Index relief evaporates. If a ceasefire holds, energy deflation could bring headline inflation back toward target within 2 quarters. The Fed's rate decision in September will hinge on a series of military and diplomatic outcomes that no central bank model can forecast with confidence. What this signals, the Federal Open Market Committee's wait-and-see posture, whatever its communication failures, is analytically defensible precisely because of that uncertainty. The error is not the decision. The error is the refusal to say so plainly. The independence question that markets are actually pricing before Trump nominated Warsh in January 2026, Warsh positioned himself as an inflation dove willing to cut rates. At the time, inflation appeared contained. That framing made him acceptable to a president who had repeatedly pressed for lower borrowing costs. Within weeks of the nomination, the Iran escalation changed the inflation picture materially, and by June, the Federal Open Market Committee faced conditions that, in any prior cycle, would have generated upward rate pressure. The cynical read, surfaced in reporting by The New Yorker, is that Warsh's deliberate ambiguity protects him from being held accountable for either hiking or cutting before November's midterms. If he commits publicly to a data-dependent trigger, say, 2 consecutive months of above-forecast inflation, then a September hike becomes unavoidable should the data arrive. Ambiguity preserves optionality. It also preserves plausible deniability in both directions. One alternative interpretation, noted by Toby Nangle of the Financial Times, is that Warsh is intentionally engineering a risk premium uplift in long-term rates by injecting policy uncertainty. Higher long-term rates without a central bank rate hike would tighten financial conditions while preserving the Fed's nominal stance, a technically unorthodox but internally consistent approach. No prior Fed chair has pursued that framework explicitly. Our view, both explanations carry weight, and institutional capital should treat them as complementary rather than mutually exclusive. A Fed chair under political pressure and running an uncertainty as policy framework produces identical observable outputs, which is precisely why the credibility damage compounds with each press conference that generates more questions than answers. What the 60-40 portfolio framework reads from this yield signal, the bond sell-off is arriving at an analytically inconvenient moment for multi-asset allocators. Long-duration treasuries are supposed to serve as the ballast in a balanced portfolio when equity risk reprices. When yields spike because of policy confusion rather than genuine growth expectations, that inverse correlation breaks down. Wall Street strategists have begun publicly acknowledging that the traditional 60-40 equity bond portfolio faces structural pressure in an environment where inflation is persistent, policy is opaque, and the geopolitical risk premium embedded in energy prices remains elevated. If long-term Treasury yields remain at post-2007-08 crisis highs, while equity earnings multiples face their own compression, both legs of the standard institutional allocation model face simultaneous headwinds. The practical consequence for institutional portfolios is that the safe haven function of U.S. government bonds has been partially delegated back to gold and real assets. Gold futures reached $42.13 per ounce in early August 2026, up $60.7 in a single session. That is not coincidence. It is capital moving away from an asset whose risk-free status depends on the predictability of the institution that sets the rate on it. The Plecamium view the market is pricing Kevin Warsh as a communication problem. Plecamium reads this as a category error. Communication problems are correctable with a better press conference. What markets are actually pricing is a structural question about whether the Federal Reserve, under a chair who positioned himself to a sitting president as a rate dove, and who refuses to give any guidance that could be held against him, retains the institutional independence that is the precondition for its inflation-fighting credibility. The precedent worth examining is not Liz Truss or Liberation Day, both of which were single-event policy shocks. The closer analog is the mid-1970s period when the Fed, under political pressure from the White House, failed to tighten sufficiently in response to supply-driven inflation and allowed second-round effects to embed. The Fed eventually corrected, but correction required Paul Volcker's willingness to inflict severe economic pain, with rates reaching 20%, to restore credibility. Warsh is not Volcker, and 4.2% inflation is not the double-digit crisis of 1980. But the direction of institutional risk is the same. Each press conference that leaves markets without a framework for the Fed's reaction function pushes the credibility cost of any eventual correction higher. A September rate hike, if it arrives, will now require larger magnitude or more decisive language to achieve the same tightening of financial conditions that a well-communicated hold could have delivered in July. For institutional allocators, the second-order trade is duration underweight across U.S. Treasuries paired with inflation-linked exposure, energy infrastructure, and physical commodities, not because the macroeconomic fundamentals necessarily warrant that positioning today, but because the distribution of outcomes has widened materially. When the institution responsible for anchoring inflation expectations stops anchoring expectations about itself, volatility is the only rational response. The Fed's September meeting is now the single most watched event on the institutional calendar. If Warsh hikes and provides a clear, data-grounded rationale, a portion of the credibility deficit is recoverable. If he holds again under ambiguous cover, the yield curve will reprice further, and the conversation will shift from communication strategy to institutional integrity. The bottom line: long-term Treasury yields at post-crisis highs are a direct cost to every borrower in the U.S. economy and a direct signal that the Fed's credibility margin is eroding. Warsh has roughly 6 weeks before the September Federal Open Market Committee meeting to decide whether he governs the Fed or lets political calculation govern him. The data available to him, oil-driven inflation, a volatile Iran ceasefire, and a June consumer price index that actually fell, gives him a defensible case for either action or inaction. What is not defensible is silence. Markets do not leave credibility gaps unfilled. They fill them with yield.